This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning, and welcome back to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. Nice to be able to see the sun has finally broken through out here on Pioneer Court on Michigan Avenue, and now we move forward with a very nice day. Just some of the latest in Donald Trump news. National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster telling ABC News, quote, "I don't remember exactly what the president said," unquote, to Russians in the Oval Office. McMaster says the, quote, "gist of the conversation," unquote, was for Trump to say he was, quote, "hamstrung," unquote, in what he could do on Russia because of the FBI. That's according to ABC News. Joining me now on the phone is Democratic State Senator Don Harmon of Oak Park. The senator is the Senate President pro tem and part of the leadership team of Democratic Senate President John Carlickton. Senator Harmon, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Good morning, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining me. Here we are. We're 10 days away from the scheduled end of the legislative session. Still seems to be a lot of back and forth. Where would you assess where we are in terms of this process of trying to reach accord with Republicans and Republican Governor Bruce Rauner on trying to find an end to this historic budget impasse?
Well, I feel like I've seen this movie before, but I'm cautiously optimistic that we are going to advance a balanced budget through the Senate this week coming up. We've been working closely, as you know, with our Republican colleagues on a bipartisan path to a bargain to lay the framework for a balanced budget for next year and for the years thereafter. We started advancing some of that legislation last week, and we actually passed several of them out of the Senate. There's still some work to do, but we remain ready to do that work and to collaborate with our Republican colleagues to see if we can work off some of the rough edges and advance a package that might pass muster with the governor.
I know there's been a lot of stops and starts in just this latest process over the last couple of weeks, including Senate President Cullerton basically saying that Senate Democrats have gone as far as they can go in these discussions with Republicans. And in some of those bills that did pass that are part of the package, there was no Republican support.
That's right. And the Republicans have pleaded for more time and more time. But we are, as you said, 10 days away from the scheduled adjournment. We're happy to negotiate, but negotiations need to lead to agreements, and agreements need to lead to votes. And that's why we started advancing some of these things, even though our Republican colleagues weren't on board. We did have Republican support on some important bills, on purchasing reforms and local government consolidation. I think we can garner some more Republican support on some of these other bills. But most importantly, we're advancing a balanced budget, and it's a budget based on the Republican framework. We've made all sorts of accommodations to their requests, and we've gotten very close. And now it's time to start advancing it through the Senate and having some votes.
Well, I know that there was a budget bill that passed, but then there's something that's known colloquially as the BIMP bill. That's the Budget Implementation Act, to basically the thing that makes the budget work, which that went down.
So just a little bit of framework. Senator Brady, a Republican senator from downstate Bloomington.
He was on the show last week, yes.
Excellent. So he brought forth a budget framework to us that I don't think anyone but perhaps the Senate Democrats took seriously. But we recognized in that a framework for reaching an agreement. At the onset, he recognized, as we did, that there was about $10 billion in demand for spending, more than we had revenues available. But we worked with them, and that included almost $4 billion in cuts. Those cuts were driven largely by Republicans, and many of those cuts were the items included in the budget implementation bill. None of the Republicans voted for it, and there's no way that Democrats acting alone could pass those sorts of deep cuts. So we'll take another look at it. We'll try to figure out what it was that caused the Republicans to walk away from their own proposal. and see if we can re-engineer it.
Well, and also part of that Brady framework, as it were, was issues involving increased revenue, raising the income tax, the personal rate to 4.95%, implementing a kind of a broader tax on services. And that revenue bill also was didn't get called.
Correct. We do. Once the budget implementation bill went down, we realized we'd need to retool these things. The revenue bill is also one driven largely by the Republican framework. It's the new revenue, if you will, is really restoring the tax rates to where they were 2 years ago when the state was balancing its budget and paying its bills. It's a little shy of the 5% rate we had in place then. We're closing a fair number of corporate loopholes, extending the sales tax to cover some services that are taxed in our neighboring states. That would be difficult to pass with only Democratic votes, and we hope that we'll be able to encourage our Republican colleagues to do what's right for their districts and not just march to the political beat that the drummer in the governor's office is calling.
When this concept of the, quote, grand bargain first took shape, it was a series of more than a dozen bills, and each of them were all dependent on each other bill passing. And now that linking process has now apparently become delinked. Why and what does that mean going forward?
That was a clever and important construct, I think, at the onset to say, look, we're putting together a package. Either all of it goes or none of it goes. There were unpalatable reforms for some Democrats that the governor was demanding that we were willing to include in order to reach a solution. But in the end, the inner politician and all of the Senate members took over, and a fair number of folks said, I can't vote for a bill that's very important to me because it is linked to a tax hike. It seems a bit of a stretch to me. I think voters understand this, but because of that reticence of some of particularly our Republican colleagues, we took out that language linking them all together just so that a vote to eliminate government units at the local level wouldn't be construed as a vote to raise taxes.
So more of a kind of a political decision for and possible campaign decision.
Yeah, I would like to say that we have been enormously accommodating to our Republican colleagues. During the course of the grand bargain, we have agreed to 35 separate changes that were asked for by Republicans in order to reach an agreement. This was just the latest of them to take away that linking language so that we didn't taint one bill with what was in another bill. We've bent over backwards trying to accommodate those concerns. We've given them more and more time. This was first called for a vote, or ready to be called for a vote in January. It's now late May, and we're staring at an adjournment date of May 31st. We're always happy to listen, but the time for unreasonable demands is long since passed.
We're speaking with Democratic State Senator Don Harmon of Oak Park. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. Joining me on the phone is Democratic State Senator Don Harmon of Oak Park. He's the Senate President Pro Tem, and he's the guy with the gavel. And trust me, you've never been gaveled out of order unless Senator Harmon has done it to you, okay? Senator, thanks so much for joining me again. Let's talk, if we can, some specifics on what is still uncertain out there. I mean, one of them seems to be this issue of the calls for a property tax freeze and the duration of the property tax freeze. And Senator Brady last week was talking about the issue of parity, that any income tax increase, the duration of it should extend for the same period of time as any property tax freeze that exists. My understanding is the Senate Democrats are looking at a 2-year property tax freeze, and that's where some of the consternation comes in. Is that what's going on?
That's one of the areas of disagreement. let's start with the basic principle. Nobody likes property taxes. No, I don't like paying them. I don't know any of my constituents who like paying them. They are unpleasant and unrelated to your ability to pay, as opposed to, say, the income tax. Freezing the property taxes has absolutely no relationship to our budget, because the state doesn't impose a property tax. That's something that's done by school districts and local governments. We'd love to freeze them. It would certainly make our constituents happy, but it wouldn't add a dime to our state budget discussion. The state taxes on the income and on sales. So it's political rhetoric to say we're going to freeze property taxes and we have to somehow tie that to what we're doing at the state level. I understand it, but it's just fundamentally dishonest. It has nothing to do with our state budget. We're willing to vote for a two-year property tax freeze, but for a group of folks in Springfield who cry about local control all the time, as my Republican colleagues do, to say we're gonna tie the hands of local governments behind their backs. We all elect our own school boards and village boards. We have a large say in what they're going to do once they're elected. So freezing the property taxes is enormously politically popular, but it just doesn't include any sort of solution to the troubles we're facing at the state level.
Well, and two, these local governments and school districts that are dependent on property taxes, community colleges, are, in some respects, they've been victimized by the budget impasse by not getting the state revenues that they're due on time.
We're getting them coming and going. And to be fair, my Republican colleagues in this bargain are advancing additional measures that would cut funding for local governments and for school districts. We included in that budget implementation bill would have been a 10% reduction in the revenue sharing we do to our local municipalities. We also passed an education funding reform bill that would fundamentally change the way we allocate new money to school districts in a way that is much more fair to school districts across the state. It would protect every school district from losing any money that it gets today, and yet that had no Republican support.
And obviously there's been a lot of consternation over this, the school funding measure, and part of that is the traditional nature of fears that schools that are basically have more property wealth, that somehow they'd be losing money in the process and it would be going to poorer schools, and it strikes at the heart of the whole inequity of how Illinois funds schools, and that the opportunities of education are basically decided by zip code rather than by the opportunities that all students should have. But, you know, without Republican support, you know, is this, you know, I'm not sure we're getting to that point. And I'm surprised we even got to the point we could pass a bill, even though it was Democrats only, given just all the complexities that exist when it comes to trying to figure out how the state should allocate money to schools. And then on top of that, you get to the question, and that ties into the property tax freeze, of our property taxes wouldn't be so darn high if the state fulfilled the obligation of paying its share.
It's a vicious circle. I think we start where you ended. The state is not living up to its constitutional obligation to be the primary source of funding for public education in the state. Until we do that, the rest of this is just chasing our tail. But we also have to look at how we distribute money to school districts. The way we've been doing it is fundamentally unfair. And I'm blessed to live in Oak Park. We have wonderful schools. We vote regularly to increase our own property taxes to pay them. But I talked to colleagues across the state. Senator Andy Menar, the lead sponsor of the education reform bill, lives downstate outside of Springfield, and talked about his children's class. They take an art class in a janitor's closet. I don't know anybody in Oak Park who would tolerate that. They'd be marching on the superintendent's office. There are other school districts where the textbooks are duct taped together. That's not acceptable in this state. The reform bill that we've advanced is agreed to by all of the education professionals across the state. It's an evidence-based model of funding students to a level of adequacy. And we, again, aren't talking about taking any money away from districts that get that money today. We would lock them in where they are today. Any new money would be distributed according to this evidence-based, scientifically sound model for distributing money where it needs to go. And all of us will be better off if every kid in Illinois is getting a good education.
But we're hearing criticism, including from the governor's office, that this bill is just another Chicago bailout.
Nothing could be further from the truth. The fact that I think people don't understand, not through any fault of their own, just the strange way we do things in Illinois. The state of Illinois pays the pension costs of every public school teacher in Illinois except in the city of Chicago. That is an enormous subsidy, especially to wealthy school districts that have larger faculties and pay them more. It's a huge transfer of wealth from city of Chicago taxpayers and, frankly, from some downstate and poorer suburban taxpayers to the wealthiest districts. Even if we just assumed the current cost of those pensions without looking at the decades and decades of legacy costs that are already buried, it would be $215 million more to the city of Chicago public schools every year. The equity here, it's not a bailout of Chicago in any stretch. It's creating some sense of parity between Chicago public schools and school districts all around the rest of the state.
But when you hear that kind of those kind of comments, to me that and I know you have great optimism here, but it's that kind of thing that signifies, well, this is the political argument, this is the political rhetoric, and this is the 2018 campaign. And what really gets to happen?
I really wish we could have a brief interlude of governing in this perpetual campaign. Governor Rauner seems to enjoy the campaigning more than he enjoys the governing. I haven't seen much governing from him in the last 2 years. But we're in the first few months still after the last general election. This is the time we traditionally have governed. There'll be plenty of time for campaigning. I'm hoping that some of my Republican colleagues, and I do believe Christine Redonio, the leader of the Senate Republicans, showed enormous political courage by entering into these conversations with President John Cullerton beginning at the end of last year, right after the election. She has members of her caucus who are determined to do the right thing. But when the governor contributes $50 million to his own campaign fund and then just this last week takes a $20 million check from Ken Griffin, the richest man in Illinois, that sends a not too subtle signal to my Republican colleagues that they better stay in line or they're going to be facing expensive primary fights in March of 2018.
That's Democratic State Senator Don Harmon of Oak Park, the Senate President Pro Tem, and a member of Senate President John Cullerton's Democratic leadership team in Springfield. Senator, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me, and thanks for paying attention to what we're doing in Springfield.
We'll be back with more right after this.